American writer Amy Tan listens to music while she writes. It creates the mood that impregnates the paper. And if she can, she listens to Rachmaninoff every day. Tan's books include The Joy Luck Club, The Kitchen God's Wife, The Bone Setter's Daughter, novels that often explore mothers and daughters. But her latest is a memoir, Where the Past Begins. She spoke to Michael Cathcart about music and writing and the fugue-like states they can evoke in her. But how long do they last?
You know, there are many periods where I go for 12 hours or whatever, but there was one particular moment or a day. It was in July 1995, and I was in this apartment, this brand new apartment in New York. My editor had just been diagnosed with cancer. So all these elements were there, where there was a lot of risk going on in my life. I went into this little closet, butler's pantry, closed the door, sat it at a plastic chair at a plastic table, and I started to write. It was about 6 p.m. And I just kept writing. I was in this scene, and there was a lot of risk, and there was somebody who might have died, and it was all a new, strange place. And I thought I had written for, a couple of hours, and I opened the door, and I was shocked because the sun was really bright, and, instead of it being night, it was just bright sun. And I thought, something weird, like the world had ended. Now we had total sunlight. We were in Iceland or something. I realized then that I had simply been writing straight through for, more than 12 hours. And during that period, I had written about 50 pages, which is the most I have ever written in one period sitting down. And most of those pages were what went into the book without a lot of revision about the narrative.
Yes, it must have been a relief to sit down and read them and discover they were good.
Yeah, pretty good. That doesn't happen with most of the writing I do. Yeah, no. I have these horrible moments with every book that I've lost it, or that I have brain damage and I'm never going to be able to finish this book.
I think every writer
has plow through.
Every writer tells me they sit down at a new book and they say, I don't know how to do this anymore.
Exactly. Every writer I know has that. Mm. And people don't realize, people who don't write, they think fiction writers, they just sit down and it's completely, you start at page one, you end at page 300, it's all been a breeze. No, it's been torment the whole way.
There's a lot here about your mother and your father, who, in matters of fundamental faith and cosmology, really lived in different universes. Can you sum up the profound differences between the ways they understood, the ways they understood the unseen forces, actually, that are driving human affairs?
Yeah. Well, my father was a Baptist minister, an evangelical Christian, and he put all his chickens in one basket, which was his faith in God, meaning God determined everything. And if you had bad things going on, you would turn to God and he would provide an answer. God controlled his fate in some way. Now, my mother had a different idea about what controlled fate. And it could have been God. It could have been bad luck. It could have been a curse, karma, bad feng shui, disharmony with nature. It could be many things. And the reason why she would look for many things is that if she could determine the cause, she could then undo, the bad things that had come about. Instead of these miracles that my father prayed for, my mother looked for what would seem less logical explanations, but at least she could find something that she could do and not simply depend on a single entity. It was a confusing time for me growing up. I wasn't recognizing entirely this difference between the way they believed until after my father and brother died. But I do know that there was a great shock when this belief in God and the prayer and the belief in the miracles did not happen. And my brother died. And then, shortly after my father, all in the span of a year.
Yeah, they both died of brain tumors. And you tell us that your mother believed after that that there was a curse on your family. Did you believe then that the family was cursed because this appalling tragedy had happened in your own home?
Well, I was caught in between believing and not wanting to believe. I'll put it that way. Who wants to believe you're cursed? Well, my mother would, she would interpret everything that that my brother and I complained about as the start of a brain tumor. And she said something about, well, we have to go away before the curse gets the rest of us. So we lived with that notion we might die, all of us. And at the same time, you know, obviously you want to be a logical person as a 15-year-old and say your mother's crazy.
Your mother did once try to kill you with a meat cleaver.
She really, you know, broke down in her mind. And you can imagine, you know, losing your husband, who was your spokesperson, the person who did everything for the family. And then losing your firstborn, who I discovered during the writing of this book was the favorite. And now she's dealing with a rebellious daughter who's determined to do everything to make her crazy, which is to go off and be with this German army deserter who's 6 years older than I am and unemployed, who smokes and all this kind of stuff. And one day I came home from school and she had a meat cleaver, a very sharp meat cleaver, and she pushed me into the bedroom and backed me to the wall with the cleaver, and she said, I'm going to kill you, and then Dee Dee, and then myself, and we can all go to heaven to be with Peter and Daddy. And her eyes were so strange. She was gone. And, you know, we were both off, you know, in our own states of craziness. And I said to her, you know, I looked at her and I thought, she could do this. And something just gave. And I just said, do it. Do it right now. I said, I just want this to be over too, like you. I want this, you know, just do it. And at the same time, I thought, this is so sad that our family has come to this. And I kept saying, do it. And then it looked like she was about to do it. My bravery suddenly was betrayed by this voice that came out of me and said out loud to her, I want to live. I want to live. That memory was gone. It was obscured for the next 25 years. And I didn't discover it until I started writing fiction and was in a workshop. It was so horrifying. I asked my mother later if it was true. And she said, yes. You were so bad and, you know, I had no one. And I said, well, why did you stop? She said, I don't remember. It was such a reckoning of both our souls and the fact that she couldn't remember. I couldn't remember what happened after that, you know, this voice, which I didn't, you know, I guess it's would be akin to a psychotic voice, or I don't know, when a voice is not your voice that comes out of you, which I think happens to people under extreme duress, fear, just, you know, when they think they're going to be killed. Maybe that was the thing that saved me, having this other consciousness come out and say, I want to live.
Just looking over your work, that this theme of mothers and their daughters recurs. It's not your only theme, but it does come back in novel after novel. Has this writing now, this writing of a memoir, has that put that theme to rest for you, do you think?
Probably not. I am interested in this notion that we narcissistic writers are keen about, which is my identity, you know, this big word, identity. But that includes these influences from childhood, which a large part includes my mother. More so than my father, because he died when I was young, and more so my mother, because that's the nature of mothers and daughters in general. They're much more intrusive in a daughter's life.
I mean, this has been a powerful conversation. Thanks so much for being so candid. I'd love to end, if you don't mind, with one of my favorite moments in the book, which is a moment of just joy. And it's something you wrote called the Toucan Can Can. It's a song. It's Toucan Can Can. Yeah.
That came to me in a dream. Toucan Can Can, Toucan Can't. Toucan Can Can, Toucan Can't. If I can can, you can can. Then Toucan Can Can. Shall we dance? Two lips will kiss. Two lips wilt. Two lips will kiss. Two lips wilt. If I may kiss you, no, you can't kiss me. Two lips will kiss. Two lips won't. Let's be a twosome. No, that's too soon. Let's be a twosome. No, that's too soon. I'll take one step. You can take one step. We two can two-step right up the church steps.
Amy Tan, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you.
Amy Tan's Where the Past Begins is published by Fourth Estate.